Thank you very much, Todd, and for the opportunity to speak to the crowd here. I'm going to be talking about a cropping system that we have worked on for 17 years. We not only worked with the system with cotton and peanut, which are the traditional rotations in the southeast, but some with corn and soybeans, and some with vegetable crops such as green beans and broccoli. But generally the same principles apply. And I will say that I could put up 50 names of people that have worked on this project, grad students, postdocs, faculty from several southeast universities. I don't know if any of you saw the Wall Street Journal yesterday, but they had a picture of this in there talking about the drought that is going on in the southeast. And we do have to develop cropping systems. I remember when I first went to Florida almost 40 years ago now, they said we would never have water problems down there because we get plenty of rain, no problem. But we've had a tri-state water war going on for I don't know how many years now, but for several years we do have a water problem, and it's only going to get worse. And so we do need to develop these cropping systems that we can use less inputs, use less irrigation water. We are seeing a lot more pivots going in the southeast. The cropping systems that we compared, we're using conservation tillage, but what most of our farmers in the southeast do, the cropping system on the right here, 2 years of cotton followed by peanut, is kind of a routine for most of our growers. We do use oat cover crop in both systems unless we have cattle, which we do have a farm-scale system of this shown on the left that we use normally oats and rye. We do use rye grass on the top of first-year bahia grass, but these are the cropping systems. 2 years of bahia grass in the sod system. We call it sod, but perennial grass system, followed by peanut, followed by cotton, with winter grazing between each crop, or on top, no-tilled onto the top of the bahia. The other systems, again, there's 2 years of cotton followed by peanuts is the traditional rotation. We have a small replicated area that we've been working with where we use conservation tillage. You see oats in the foreground. We use strip tillage. Again, these are things that conservation groups all across the country recommend. High residue. We have not been using multi-species to this point in there, except maybe oats and rye. We have not been using clovers or any of the tillage radishes. But you see the bahia grass right just north of the oats there. You see the irrigation system we've got. This has been in place, again, for 17 years. Irrigated and non-irrigated. The non-irrigated reps never get irrigated from planting to harvest throughout the season so that we can look at the impacts of irrigation. This slide kind of summarizes my whole talk, but I won't quit here. starting on the left-hand side is what a lot of growers do. They have the single crop using the conventional rotation. And if you look at the X above there, the environmental benefits continue to increase as we go through these different cropping systems. The amount of water and nutrients and other inputs, pesticides that we have to apply, decreases. We've got data on all of this, but the second bar to the left is what a lot of the conservation groups do across the country. They have their conventional, whether it's corn, soybean, they may use cover crop and strip tillage or no tillage. And sometimes they get a little bit of increase in yields, but not all of the time. if you include cattle on top of that, from what we have seen, we can dramatically increase yields, and I'll be showing you data on that. But that's still not the best that we can do. As you include a perennial grass in there, in our case, we've been using Bahia grass. It's definitely a step up. When you use a cover crop on top of Bahia grass, after we kill it out in the fall, and I'll show you that, and use strip tillage, it enhances it. Adding cattle in there enhances it even further. Again, this is what people do all across the country: high residue cover crops or mixtures, planting crops into that. It does control erosion, retain soil moisture, and many other benefits there. But our goal when we started this project is, we have a lot of data, and a lot of data across the country that shows if you follow perennial grasses, and that's what the entire Midwest was, high organic soils, that it benefits the crops that follow that. But we in the Southeast, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, about 25% of our row crop farmers have cattle. And those are the people that we are targeting. And after 17 years, our Department of Environmental Protection and Department of Agriculture and the Water Management Districts are now, this coming year, they have been to a minimal degree the past 4 years funding farmers to convert to some of this as incentive payments. But what we say is that conservation tillage does conserve what we have, but the sod-based rotation restores what's been lost, and that's organic matter. We don't have much in the Southeast in general. Our farm-scale system is a 160-acre field with 40 acres in peanuts, 40 in cotton, 40 in first-year Bahia, 40 in second-year Bahia. The blue areas there are cages. We do have a cow-calf operation on top of this. It is on our beef unit, so it is a working farm. But we want to try to figure out the cattle impacts on soil, physical, and chemical properties, as well as impacts on the crop yields, cotton and peanuts. The little picture on top on the left, we do have wells there put in by DEP that we are monitoring nitrates, which is a major factor in a lot of our watersheds in Florida. We have collected a tremendous amount of data on all of these things: water infiltration, earthworm populations, bulk density, soil respiration, many, many things. I won't discuss all of it, but I will show you data here. So immediately after cotton and peanut harvest, if it's in the small plots, we will be planting our cover crops. If we've just harvested cotton and peanut in the farm situation, we've got oats and rye planted there. We do not use rye grass where we want to plant the perennial grass the next year, because we don't get stands. It took us a few years to learn that. But here's the winter. The fields here showing the oats and rye and the exclusion cages, they are GPS. The corners are all GPS. Anytime cows are in any of the plots, whether it's on the winter grazing or on the summer grazing, we have the fences up. And they're never allowed in there so that we can determine, again, the impacts of cattle. This is actually this past year drilling Bahia grass into the winter grazing. The cattle continue to graze while the Bahia is getting started. A little bit later on, the cattle continue to graze inside the exclusion cages. Again, they're not allowed to get in there. Usually, pretty close to the time that we plant the Bahia grass, we will kill out the oats and rye inside the exclusion cages, because it can get 5 or 6 feet tall and actually smother out the Bahia grass. Here you can see a little bit later on in the background another quadrant where we're putting up the exclusion cages. When we first started out on this, because we had about 80 acres that were going to be in first or second year bahia grass, we said we would use 45 cow-calf pairs. After the first year, we had a lot more forage than cattle. We have increased that to about 90 cow-calf pairs. In the winter, we'll have another 100 head of winter stockers in there. It's about a 1,100-acre farm, and we've got about 300 cow-calf pairs on the entire farm, and two-thirds of them will be in this portion of the farm during the winter. And one reason for that is that row crop land is generally more fertile than pasture land because you fertilize it every year when you plant the crops, whereas pastures get fertilized whenever, and it's not near as intensive. So this is what it looks like. We planted the bahia grass into the winter grazing. We continued to graze it. See, May 15th, it's generally grazed out down our way, but you can see the rows of bahia grass. In some years, we've had plenty of rain during that period of time, and it will come on, and we don't have to take the cattle off. Typically, like this year, you'll pull them off for 6 weeks. You see, by July 1, it looks like it's fully established. When we first started this project, we would graze the oats and rye completely out into the May-June period, and then plant bahia grass, and crabgrass, and goosegrass, and all of that would come up with it. You never knew whether you had a bahia stand or not. In the exclusion cages then, where we plant strip-till cotton or peanut into there, we take down the fences. You see in the foreground there, take down the fences, plant through it just like the rest of the field. In the background, you see the cattle and cage in the background. We did, where the wheel of the irrigation system comes through, we do have swing gates on that now so that we don't have to stop and take down fences when the irrigation system comes through. When you're working on a active farm and the cattle, people say, well, can you hold off planting for another 2 or 3 weeks? You have to do that. That's what a farmer would do. If he had cattle and he needed the winter grazing, and that's generally what happens. We say, well, we would like to have high biomass, but you see cotton strip-tilled into oats and rye that's probably 2 inches tall. Peanuts are planted where the pea is on that side, and again, they will graze it down almost to the ground because they don't have grazing in the rest of it. Bahia grass, too, actually, it's a little over a year old in the background, and bahia was planted into the winter grazing on the left. Again, one thing that we've found, we've got three groups of calves on the farm, and in general, they have averaged from 50 to 100 pounds higher weaning weights off of this system. We have traded the groups around to not bias the data on the calves, but a lot of that is because we have more forage, and again, it's more nutritious because it comes out of a field that is fertilized more heavily each year. Here's three soil cores that we pulled, and this is kind of typical. You know, which is the most healthy or most fertile? You see the bottom tube is actually came out of a field that has had vegetables for the last 40 years. It's turned every year, but you don't see any organic matter in the top of the soil profile. And that's what we're adding with those perennial grasses. You see the top two cores, and that is Florida soils. We do have some clays in some places. Increasing organic matter. So we have also done work looking at organic matter, pH, EC. Actually, this machine pulled across there. And the system does make a difference in EC from the first spring to the second spring. We do see big differences in pretty much everything in organic matter, especially looking at the conventional system versus using the perennial grass in the system. The oats and rye will have 3,000 to 4,000 pounds per acre of root mass. Two-year-old bahia grass will have 20,000 pounds of root mass. And the roots, even when you, if you look at the bottom pictures, when you strip till through it, it's got a ripper foot on that strip till rig. Well, you've got areas in the oats on the bottom left that are almost a foot wide where the rows are. The same machine running through that bahia grass with 20,000 pounds of root mass, it doesn't tear up hardly any area at all because of the root mass still holding the soil together. When you look at our small plots, the non-irrigated versus irrigated, this is kind of what it looks like every year. May is generally when we plant dry, and the non-irrigated you see is coming on slowly. The irrigated looks good. You can see the cover crops in there. Here's what it looks like a month later in early July. The conventional rotation, again, you see the cover crop, oat cover crop in the row middles, but irrigated in the foreground, just north of that line is non-irrigated in the conventional, using 0 and 60 pounds of N per acre. You might say, why 0 nitrogen? We were getting very little response in the sod-based rotation to nitrogen. And you can see that in the bottom, irrigated in the foreground, non-irrigated in the background. This is what it looks like every year. Tremendous difference. And essentially, every year for 17 years, including this year, the non-irrigated sod cotton will equal or out-yield the irrigated conventional cotton, whereas, and a lot of that is due to the organic matter that we have increased. Also, we have looked at earthworms, and there you see actually an earthworm hole, or it was the root of the bahia grass that went down through the natural compaction layer. The water infiltration rates on the bottom there, PNS after bahia grass, 2.5 centimeters of water took less than a minute. In the conventional rotation, cotton after peanuts, almost 9 minutes. So during heavy rains, if we get a rain, we can get the subsoil recharged in that sod-based rotation. The graph on the right actually just came from this nematologist working with us this past week, reniform nematodes. The yellow bars are in the conventional rotation. Green bars are in the sod-based rotation. Tremendous difference. He is going to have a grad student to work on the entire system. A few years back, the people at Virginia Tech said, well, will it work with cool season grasses? And our comment was, we think so, because, you know, the Midwest had grasses. We've worked with switchgrass, Bermuda grass, bahia grass in the deep south, and they didn't do water infiltration, but it was pouring rain one day. They went out and fescue and orchard grass followed by cotton versus cotton peanut and soybean cotton in the top. If you look every place where the perennial grass was, there's no water standing. Look in the background and or to the side, and you see standing water in what is the conventional thing that most growers do across the country. So this, to me, we had the data, but when you start looking at a picture, it's like, oh, I see what it's doing. It's a tremendous impact. Again, there are cotton yields behind fescue and orchard grass. 2 years up there were 500 to 700 pounds of lint, more than in a traditional rotation. Again, using conservation tillage. We thought when we first started working with cattle that cattle would probably compact the soil and we would see, you know, some detrimental impacts. We do have in the top 6 inches of the soil profile more higher bulk density than where it's not grazed. But when you start looking at nitrates down through the soil profile, the dotted lines on the right-hand side there are grazed. The solid line are non-grazed. 3 years of data that shows that essentially we had in the root zone 2 to 4 times the amount of nitrates left in the root zone outside the cages than inside the cages. So the cattle were out there every day really recycling nutrients. Potassium showed the same thing. Again, the two dotted lines, irrigated and non-irrigated, grazed. Almost double the amount of potash, because a lot of the potassium really comes from the urine. And so it is out there available for the crop. Because this farm scale system is in a BMAP area where there's high nitrates in the class 1 spring, we had done lysimeter work, but it's really hard to pick up really what's going on. Going down to 7 meters deep looking at nitrates, the colored circles are all in the side base rotation, either grazed or non-grazed. Again, you see that we had maybe a third the amount of nitrates there as in where only a summer crop was being grown. A single crop, whereas all of the colored bars, there was something going on every day out of the year. There was either cattle on there or there was some winter cover crop. We also put in many rhizotron tubes inside and outside the cages on both peanuts and cotton. Here's cotton roots, 3-year average, 20,000 images that we had taken down to a meter deep. And essentially, once you got below that first 6 inches of soil profile, the root mass was almost double where cattle grazed versus not having cattle in there. Again, yields, cotton yields over this 15 years, the non-irrigated side-based cotton has equaled or out-yielded the conventional cotton, and you can see quite a bit of variability in there, but some very high yields in some years. We had a very dry year in 2007. The figure on the right-hand side, cotton leaf water potential, the black dots are the side cotton, non-irrigated, and essentially the first 90 days we didn't need to irrigate anyway. So this system does work. We also looked at the same thing on cotton, grazed versus non-grazed, and at least doubled the root mass after grazing versus not grazed. And this is what I try to get our crop growers to do. They say, well, you know, I don't want cattle on my place, or I don't want to have to deal with them. And my comment is, do you have a neighbor that's got cattle? You know, get him to come in on your place, because our cotton yields have averaged from 200 to 400 pounds more lint every year behind grazing than not grazed. And a lot of that is due to recycled nutrients and having a root system. I always ask them, which root system would you rather have going through a drought, behind grazing or non-grazed? Again, peanut leaf water potential showed very much the same thing. The sod, irrigated and non-irrigated during that year, very dry year, very little stress early on. We also found that with grazing, we had more roots down deeper, faster, gave us a lot of drought tolerance there. Again, peanut yields non-irrigated every year. We did change varieties about 2008, and the yields increased pretty dramatically in the system. Also, looking at carbon storage, if you look at the graph, the cotton peanut in the summer, fall, and winter, the carbon stored in the Bahia system on the right-hand side, Bahia 1, Bahia 2, the sod peanut and the sod cotton, much higher carbon storage, and again, due to more robust root systems. And also the indicator enzymes for carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur cycling were increased in the sod system. Also, we have seen when you add cattle to that, the microbial population increases even further along with the yields. So, the sod rotation plus grazing, and this is a variable rate irrigation system that we have there. We base that on the EC and other factors, but there is a website if you want to go on there. We do have an economic model. Here's the where we are with the Tri-State Water Wars. The black line is what growers are doing right now, the amount of irrigation. If we could reduce irrigation by 70%, we could increase water flows in the Apalachicola River by 1,000 cubic feet per second. That this is what the business model will show. Your yields the first year, of course, without cattle, not so much labor in the winter, but 200-acre farm making maybe $13,000. Once you get into this system with cattle and higher yields, you're about $125,000. You ask a young person, you know, right out of college, would you like to do this, just farm 200 acres? You could make $13,000, $15,000 a year. And he would say, I've got to go somewhere. But you tell him that he could do that on, you know, make $125,000, he might very well do it. Again, most growers will say, you know, I'm paying $100, $150 an acre for row crop land. I can rent pasture land for $30 an acre. Why would I want to do it? Here's a year yield map. The red is you're losing money. Yellow, you're breaking even, you're making a profit in the green areas. And most of our growers will say that they have about 25% of their farm that is below, you know, break even. And this is kind of, and I always say, well, how long have you been farming it? And they'll say, well, 20 years. And I say, you're risking $650 an acre every year, and why don't you put Bahia there, try it? And we have had growers to do that. So, anyway, that is a brief overview. I would invite any of you, if you want to come down for a tour to see what we've been doing for these many years. But thank you.
So, wait one second. So, burning questions, but we do have 15 minutes for discussion at the end. Go ahead, Dr. Smith.
We have never had any disease issues on peanuts, and a lot of people say, can you strip till into Bahia? And we have been doing it. We've got actually four farmers that had Department of Agriculture had funded. They got into it 4 years ago. They're strip tilling into it too. It can be challenging, but once you set your mind that you're going to work it out, you can work it out. Normally, what we do on two-year-old Bahia grass, we will round up it in the fall and no-till oats and rye over the top of it, and cattle graze it all winter, and then we strip-till into that. So it gives us a chance for the roots to break down a little.